Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, a place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 7, Episode 71, and it is our wrap-up of the 2016 season as the Steelers, Dave, they get whooped, really, by the New England Patriots. They go down 36-17 in the AFC Championship game, and New England will represent the AFC in Super Bowl 51 in Houston. What are your thoughts?
One team was playing chess and the other team was playing checkers. That's what I think. you better bring your best. Not only scheme but execution wise when you play Bill Belichick and the Patriots. If you don't, you get what you had. Have happened there Sunday night in Foxborough. It was reminding me of back in high school at a small Catholic high school I went to when we'd get an opportunity to play the JV team. It wasn't even close. And we talked about on Friday how this would probably be a great measuring stick for the Steelers, especially probably on the defensive side of the ball. And I think we can look back at what happened Sunday and say they got a lot of ticks to go there on the measuring stick.
Yeah, Dave, and maybe the concern here out of this, and I don't want to change, I'm not going to do a 180 on what I think of this team or where they are or what the future holds. But there was a week back, and I can't remember exactly which game it was, but in a Tuesday press conference, I asked Mike specifically, how do you, when you watch the film, talk to your guys about plays the other team didn't execute or plays they left on the field? And his response was, sometimes it's good to be fortunate. And I thought that was a very good response. But at the same time, it kind of raised the concerns that I had about this defense in the passing game, sometimes being able to be exploited. And we saw the Kansas City game. And anybody who kind of went through that tape again saw that Alex Smith missed some things. And every quarterback's going to miss some things. Tom Brady missed a couple throws yesterday. And Hogan once down the seam wide open. Obviously, when we look back at the game, that didn't have much of an impact because he hit virtually everything else. But, Dave, I don't know that I've seen a game where I saw receivers downfield more open than I saw in this game. And the only thing I come back to, and I hate it, but it's exactly the same situation. It's the Steelers in Foxborough, 2013, when they absolutely took the Steelers apart in that third and fourth quarter. And what was the final score? The Steelers gave up 51 or 55 and got blown out of that game. And I felt that way in this game. You thought maybe things settled down after that second drive when Hargrave got the sack and it felt like the Patriots weren't going to be able to run the ball, but man, there was never a time where it felt like the Steelers were going to be able to slow up this passing attack.
About the only thing they managed to do right in that game, and they didn't even do that 100%, as we saw late on a run by LeGarrette Blount, just plowing through people, busting them, bad tackling, all that, was stop the run. Tom Brady recognized what they were trying to do. He spread them out into empty and isolated their number three wide receiver on the Steelers zone spot dropper. And that was that, literally. And I can't wait. It'll probably be several days before I'm able to accomplish it because of so much of the end of the year stuff that we have to do. And of course the Senior Bowl this week though, I'd like to go back through and time the average snap to release time on Tom Brady.
Yeah.
How many plays do you think that Tom Brady's snap to release time was let's say 2.8 seconds or greater?
I don't know. That's a good question, because there are two things that happened. Is one is when Brady saw the matchup he wanted and got the look he wanted, he was able to get the ball out quickly. And when his first read wasn't there, he had time to make his second, third, or fourth read. And, you know, that was epitomized most glaringly by the opening touchdown to Hogan, where I think it's his fifth read in the back of the end zone. And Robert Golden ends up being the closest guy to Hogan when he catches it. And Robert Golden's not 5 yards away. He's further away. There's not a guy within 5 yards of him. So the answer is, when he was on schedule, he did it no problem, and I'm sure that was 80% of the time. But when he wasn't, that wasn't a problem either.
Well, look, we came into this knowing that it's going to be tough for you to blitz Tom Brady, right? And that obviously, when they did do it, it didn't work. If you're going to blitz Tom Brady, you better hope to hell that you get home and you get home quickly, or at least force him to get outside, you know, to move. Once he becomes unsettled, that's when maybe he can make something happen with it. But he never really, outside of the sack by Javon Hargrave, you know, which was kind of what early on.
It was a drive killer, at least. It was a big play.
Right. But I mean, outside of that, how many times do you really remember him getting bounced around or hit or heavily pressured? I guess what I'm getting at is I have a feeling that Tom Brady's, and this is just a guess, and I've only gone back and watched the game one time, you know, after the original, I'm going to guess his average snap to release time was, you know, 2.8 seconds or higher. And that's a lot of time. In these days, for an NFL quarterback. And, you know, once again, you know, why the Steelers didn't come out and kind of body up more on some of these wide receivers, especially on guys on, you know, the number three guys, you know, in the slot, the Edelmans and whatnot. Why you give these guys free releases like they did, I don't really understand. You know, they probably should have played some more cover one in this one. You remember the quote by that James Harrison was asked a few days ago about Tom Brady, talking about Tom Brady. I think Pursuta asked it or follow up question about Tom Brady reading your mail.
Harrison said, yeah, Tom Brady reads your mail, and Mike said, do you mean that literally? And he said, no, but that's funny. But obviously, talking about you show him a defensive alignment, and he knows exactly what you're trying to do.
And was that not the case last?
Yes, that was clearly the case. And look, Dave,
he was reading their mail. He was reading their, what else was he reading?
He was looking in on what was going on in the bedroom while he was reading the mail.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you want to talk about the spike? You know, you want to talk about having cameras at practice? I mean, geez, it really looked like that might have been the case. But you know, obviously, I'm trying to be funny there. But nobody, I don't, you know, outside of Peyton Manning, of course, he no longer plays. I mean, is there anybody better in the league at identifying what you're doing pre-snap and getting an offense? Look, I mean, there's sometimes he's getting them in the empty 7 seconds left on the damn play clock.
Yeah, I just tweeted, for those who Chris B. Brown of Smart Football put up a post. It's about a 7-minute video of Bill O'Brien when he was quarterback's coach. He had been quarterback's coach of the Patriots, obviously. He was still the head coach of Penn State. So the video is about three or four years old. But he's at a clinic, and he's talking about things the Patriots do going empty set. And it's about a 7-minute video. And if you want to get into some of the X's and O's, it's a great little video to check out. So take a look at that. But, Dave, here's the thing. And look, you and I like to pass ourselves off as knowledgeable football guys. And we've been doing this a long time. And neither of us would begin to dare say that we know as much as anybody who does this for a professional living in terms of a coaching staff. Having said that, it's bewildering to see the Steelers. And we have talked about it. I know I have, and I know you have. I have talked about it for years, about the Steelers playing no press, playing very little bump and run. And I, you know, the game I cite, and I go back to this all the time because it's the time I almost lost my mind when the Chargers came in with no offensive line and Rivers was playing quarterback into Pittsburgh, and they just smoked the Steelers because Philip Rivers threw 7 yards out the whole game. Now, that's not what happened yesterday, but essentially it is what happened yesterday because, as you say, Brady could check into empty. He knew exactly who was going where. He knew who the mic was. He knew the zone coverages they were going to play. And on top of it all, as if he needed it, he got good protection. And that allowed him the time to, you know, scan the field. And, you know, I think we did – honestly, I think there was some level of dismissiveness of his receivers because they're a bunch of white guys. And I made the joke in the second half, you know, cover the white guys. You know, there are not many white receivers. It's just factual matter. And, you know, there is a perception, whether it's incorrect or correct, with the DBs and the wide receivers mostly being black in the NFL, that those are the better athletes. And so that these guys should be able to be covered. Let's at least acknowledge that these guys are quick as hell and able to create space for them in tight spaces. And they obviously did a great job of it yesterday.
Yeah, and look, I mean, you have to have smart receivers to make sure that they're seeing what the quarterback sees and know what their checks are. As soon as Brady checks in and out of one thing, what are we always hearing these clips on from Bill Belichick? You know, do your job. Know your job.
And I actually just watched that video. If you've never seen it, I watched it, this week. And it's a video on their 2014 season, and that's exactly what it is. It's you do your thing and do it as best you can and do it well, and everything else will fall into place.
And Belichick is a master at taking guys, you know, smart football players that might not be, you know, might not
the most athletic,
or the most well-timed, but he gets smart football players that buy into what they do there, and it probably doesn't hurt that you practically have a coach on the offensive side of football in Tom Brady, and nobody on that side of football, Belichick included, is going to push that unit as hard as he does, right? I mean,
it's you say almost a coach, and the answer is, you know, he is. And I mean, the relationship with McDaniel, kind of the second time around now, going back, and you know, the three of them having the continuity. Again, I come back to that word about organizations, continuity, and the skill level. I mean, you know, it's almost you're hearing the resignation in David and my voice, and I heard somebody use that word in the locker room. I mean, they got their butts kicked. We'll get into some of the details of the game and could have done some things better. But, I mean, even the idea that Le'Veon Bell would have had an impact on this game differently, I find that difficult to believe because Le'Veon Bell's not slowing down the Patriots' offense. And at the end of the day, we can talk about what the Steelers' offense was supposed to be this year. Well, the answer is they weren't. I mean, they really weren't what they hoped it to be, and I think over the last 6 weeks of the season, we saw that, you know, as much as I like Eli Rogers or hoped for Ladarius Green, we saw that they didn't really have a big second receiving threat, and Le'Veon Bell became a go-to guy on the ground, but he wasn't a receiving threat down the stretch or in the playoffs. He only caught 4 balls, and that came back to hurt him. And so I'll just throw this in as we were talking about the Patriots, Dave. You know, I put a lot of the weight of this game on Ben Roethlisberger's shoulders. I don't think enough people going into the game, you know, everybody was talking about Bell or AB, and I was like, this is on Ben. He needs to be much better than he's been. And you know what? I thought Ben was really good yesterday. Now, the game got out of hand at the end, and I didn't judge his performance on that. But I thought Ben was excellent. I thought the O-line was excellent. And that makes it even rougher when you lose as badly as they lose because it was not on the quarterback or the offensive line.
All right, first, are we moving on from the defense now?
No, go ahead. Hit it again.
Okay, here's the thing. Just some final thoughts. People are tweeting me this morning, zone defense doesn't work anymore, this, that, and the other. Look, if you have to mix in coverages, you have to have pattern reading, you have to be able to do it all in today's NFL defensively. And going back to kind of one of the things that I think you tried to open with there, talking about comments, Tomlin said, about
being fortunate,
and all like that. Go back to the week one game against the Washington Redskins.
Yeah, Cousins was awful.
And how many plays they left on the field. That's going to happen in every game. You're going to talk about plays left on the field, but you can't use that as a, you can't use that as the dominating theme that, well, we won because they left plays on the field. That shouldn't be the post game narrative, if you will. Should the Steelers adjusted? And look, I haven't gone back through, and we haven't even begun charting this whatsoever. I'm going off of what I remember on play to play, which right now, after watching it just two times, isn't a lot. Should they played more cover one? Yes, they should have. Should they played less? Here's the thing: it's not going to matter what you play, zone. Man, and look, go back and watch the first couple of drives. You see quarters, you see cover two, you see cover three, you see Tampa two with Timmons dropping down the middle of the field. They played the whole gamut there in the first couple of drives there. Here's the thing: regardless of what coverage you call and blitzes you call, if you can't get pressure on the opposing quarterback, and especially with a quarterback like Tom Brady with four or less people, it's not going to matter what you play on the back end. Because if you're giving him 2.8 to 3 seconds to get rid of football, how long can you expect your guys to stay with him on the back end? So here's the thing. I talked about pass defense all year long, and Keith Butler and the rest of that coaching staff need to be commended on the second half turnaround. I don't know if you saw the post that I did, but the drop in adjusted net yards per passing attempt from the first 8 games to the second 8 games of the Steelers was the biggest drop in the NFL of a first half and second half team dating back to, what was it, 2005, 2006, something along those lines. So they should be commended at the improvement that pass defense made. And that's getting after the quarterback. That's every bit of it. However, they're just not there yet. And you have 3 rookies on the defensive side of the ball. You're going to have another one or two on the defensive side of the ball last year. So it was a good start. It just, as we started with at the top of the show, David, we wanted a measuring stick for this defense, and we got it, and they got a long way to go. Now, as far as offense, young receivers, is that where you were going?
Well, I think that, yeah, I mean, just why don't you just first, do you agree with my assessment of Ben in the O-line?
I mean, outside of that
pass to DHB?
Well, the red zone, the deep, the goal to go situation where I think Xavier Grimble may have had some responsibility in a fail down there as well.
Let me ask you. I got so many questions, and let me get your thoughts on some of these. One is, do you think Ben's unsuccessful checks into passing plays 2 times against Kansas City led him to not check out of against 8 and 9 man fronts in that situation against the Patriots?
I can't answer that.
No, I know you can't. I mean, I know we don't know, but do you think that? I mean, I think we all think if you're going to go play action, second down, first and second down are the downs to go play action. Ben hadn't had success, so I wasn't surprised they ran it on first down. But then they showed him like a 9 man, across the top front, and I just couldn't believe it. D'Angelo Williams is 7 yards deep in the backfield, so he's got his heels on the 9. And I'm looking at that formation, looking at that play, just going, good God, just don't don't run it right up the middle here because it's not going to end well. And, you know, it didn't end well.
I'm going to say this, and I'm going to, and people are going to take this as me hating Ben Roethlisberger again. And
I thought that was my job.
And that's not the case. I say this with peace and love, peace and love. Sometimes I'm not convinced Ben knows what he's looking at on the other side of football.
Oh, I think that's fair because when he checked to the pass that got intercepted in Kansas City, he checked into a play against the wrong defense. When the touchdown to Antonio Brown that won the game against the Ravens, he sent the guy in motion thinking it was man, and it wasn't. And he ran a play that was not designed against that defense. It worked out. Yeah, and look, he's not Tom Brady, okay? So I think that's fair.
Okay, and, you know, I think the Patriots – look, Matt Patricia, and why doesn't Matt Patricia have another head coaching job? or have a head coaching job? Look, we know why Josh McDaniels might not have one, right? I mean, did you love?
I don't know, you know how you spent your time going into the game with the other game on, but it was amazing to see all the talking heads talk about. See, when I talked to people, it was clear that Shanahan was the hot commodity, not McDaniel. It was Shanahan's the hot commodity. And 3 hours later, like, McDaniel's a very hot commodity still, you know. It's like just because Shanahan looked so good the first thing, they wanted to downplay McDaniel. And then obviously both those coordinators come out smelling like a rose after the Steeler game.
And when you look, Bill O'Brien's a former Bill O'Brien's, of course, a former member of the Patriots staff. Romeo Crennel. I mean, look, if anybody can come close to cracking the Tom Brady nut, it's him, right? I mean, but you know, they still didn't have enough in Houston there. You now see who's the one in the linebackers coach, former Steeler. I'm drawing a blank. Their linebacker coach in Houston.
Vrabel, who's a DC down in Houston, yeah.
Right.
We've got a head coaching interview in San Francisco, interestingly.
Right. I mean, where were we going with this? They do a great job on the defensive side of football, just as well as they are so damn well coached. Okay, you know that pass to Eli Rogers on the third and what was it?
Yeah, the one he got the big gain. It was actually the one long third down they converted.
Right. Well, you know that one. The one that they didn't convert. That was incomplete. You remember that one? Out to the right.
The one up. You mean on third and goal from the five, that one, or
right?
Oh yeah, I mean that smelled a little bit like the play that they ran on third and one on the other side against KC last week. It wasn't exactly the same play design, but I mean that baby had no chance.
Right, especially when a well coached Patriots defense is running some banjo coverage behind. You know, on that side,
you're gonna lose some listeners on that term.
All right, well that's your inside corner and your outside corner recognizing and switch, you know, not going man and getting rubbed off of
right.
each other.
Just being, quickly recognizing they can pass guys along.
Right, they pass guys off to each other. So you know that's your banjo. I mean, David, I could sit here from now until training camp starts and go through that entire game and still not catch everything of how well that the Patriots did and the Steelers didn't do well. You know, I mean, it's just the measuring stick, you know, they're just not there. And, You have when you play Tom Brady, or the Patriots in general, you have to be able to convert big plays, combative catches. The Steelers had opportunities in this game to do that. The early deep ball to Sammy Coates right off the hands. The pass to Kobe Hamilton in the end zone right out of the bread basket. What else was there? Jesse James failing to come up with a pass. Of course, it obviously it obviously didn't help that you lose Le'Veon Bell early to a groin injury. Mike Tomlin admitted that they probably didn't adjust quickly or well enough to that. The young Belichick did a great job of bracketing AB in cone coverages and.
Yeah, and that was if you want to talk about kind of you want to see the exact bracket, you know, type of corner trail into you know a cover two or depending on what you want to call exactly what the Patriots were playing, it was the ball that was underthrown that Malcolm Butler almost picked off early in the game where and I think Ben Mattis started his completion streak right after that with like 11 or 12 in a row. Where Antonio Brown, give him credit, did a good job of getting the ball away from Malcolm Butler. But you saw the coverage. You saw Malcolm Butler's in purposely in kind of a trail position and because he knows he has safety help over the top. Now, when I say trail, it's not 5 yards off trail like we saw some of the Steeler defenders. It's trail. He's, you know, he can reach out and touch him, but he's playing underneath him with safety help over the top. And Ben underthrew that ball you know, it was lucky it didn't get picked, but that's a perfect example of you want a specific play where you can see the bracket coverage. And again, I don't know if Ben knew the safety was over the top, so he was trying to underthrow it and let AB fight for it. But it was not a wise throw because there was no way he's getting it in that window.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we talked before the game about whether or not we thought what should the Patriots do? Take Antonio Brown away or take Le'Veon Bell away. Well, I think we both agree you just can't have Antonio Brown chewing up 50 to 60 yards on you on a pop, right? And, of course, the rest taking Le'Veon Bell out, he didn't have to worry about that too long, did he?
Look. Le'Veon Bell's a great football player. I don't know that Le'Veon Bell makes a stitch of difference. Obviously, as I said earlier, he's not going to play defense. And, you know, the Steelers defense didn't seem to have an answer. And, you know, that first drive in there for D'Angelo Williams was a great drive. The Steelers moved right down the field to the half-yard line. And, look, I sounded silly on Twitter when I said this might be a blessing in disguise when Jesse James was short. And they said the offensive line's blowing him off the ball. I assume they can get a half yard. And this will at least, you know, force the Patriots to use a timeout or two. And, you know, I was even getting cute saying, you know, how courageous, how ballsy would it be for Ben to take, you know, just kind of dive on a sneak. And if he's short, it doesn't make any difference because you don't lose yardage. Well, all that looks silly now because they got stuffed. But the way the line was playing and the way things were going was good. But the flip side of that is we saw that play where, you know, we didn't see Ali Villanueva pull very often this year, but they, you know, it's something we had never seen before. And there's a play where he pulls, where it's a run right, where D'Angelo Williams gets the ball in front of him, and D'Angelo Williams doesn't even, you know, even think about Villanueva's role in the play. I mean, it's done. Villanueva's, it's like D'Angelo's the lead blocker for Villanueva. He's not going to be involved in the play because it's a different running style, and you run the plays during the week thinking it's going to be Le'Veon Bell. We can argue that it was a bad play call in that situation by Todd or Ben or whoever made it, but it has an impact for sure. I don't think it changes the outcome. Dave, let's take a breather from the beating that we're taking and that the Steelers took and remind everybody that mortgage rates are currently at or near all-time lows. And if you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, purchase a vacation, refinance, get out of the States for a while, call our buddy Craig Oxham from First Advantage Mortgage, a lifelong Steeler fan and a Pittsburgh native. Craig's a nationally recognized lender that would love the opportunity to help out podcast listeners. You can call Craig Oxham today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Or email Craig at craig@blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. Company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. And back to it.
Yeah, chess and checkers, right? I mean.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, I do know the definition now of insanity and the chess and checkers analogy because I did see that a lot, but it's a reasonable one. Let me ask you two questions. One is, for years we have now talked about, you and I have talked about, third and one, they get a look they want on the outside. They know that they're not often going to get free man coverage particularly press man coverage with no safety help, unless it is short yardage situations. And they like to take the shots. We've seen it. We've seen it be successful. We've seen it fail. But, you know, they've lived and died with it. It is who they are. They do it. They did it with Sammy Coates on that play, and it was a perfect throw by Ben. Do you fault the play call? Do you fault the decision to throw to Sammy Coates, who has been not involved for 10 or 12 weeks, or are you fine with it?
First of all, a few days ago, I put on Twitter what I deem my bold prediction of the week, and that was that Sammy Coates would catch at least one deep pass on Sunday, and one.
My God, you could have been five plays in the game and been dead smoking on.
Well, here's the thing. There was one follower on Twitter that said that's not a bold prediction, and I thought, how is that not a bold prediction? This is a guy that hasn't caught a deep pass since week five of the season. I mean, my God, this is.
And he's only caught two passes, period.
And how many snaps has he played since like the Baltimore game that I put up? What was it, like 58 or something? You know, how is that not a bold prediction? And I'm not saying this because, I was right. No, I'm saying it because I kind of had just a feeling that, boy, you had it. You know, he's been out this long or not been that active in the game plan. How shocking would it be if they got him back involved again? I mean, he's obviously healthy enough. I've never understood this whole healthy enough to play on special teams and catch kickoffs, but not healthy enough to play 30 snaps on offense.
I've been asking that question. And guys who watch him in practice, say that he's making the catches. And Dave, you know, here's the thing. And let's, you know, we talk about all the creative stuff Belichick does. And so let's give Tomlin and Haley credit for getting that matchup. He's got to catch that ball, right? I mean, he looks like not only did he slow up, he short armed it.
Yeah, alligator arms, right? I mean, it looked like that Geico commercial where that one's trying to pick up the check, right?
I mean, I have no idea what was going on there because. I mean, really, you can't make a better throw. He threw it perfectly.
Here's what Jim Nantz told Phil Sims right after. I almost swallowed my gum, and I wasn't chewing gum. Here's what Jim Nantz told Phil Sims after that play. Yeah, the pass was right there, and Tomlin's saying that Coates has been killing everybody in practice the last couple of weeks. Killing everybody. How? I mean, killing everybody with drops or what? And then there was the excellent stat that was floating around. I think Football Focus on the amount of drops. Look, by me professing on Twitter that I thought Sammy Coates, I've been accused of being a Sammy Coates lover. And we've been accused of being Sammy Coates lovers now, Dave, because we talked so much about him. Me thinking that he might get a deep reception in this game is not me being a Sammy Coates lover. It's just that kind of, thought that kind of thing might transpire. And boy, once the pregame inactives came out and DeMarcus Ayers wasn't on there, and the Steelers only dressing five wide receivers at that point, you had to think, well, you know, what's going on here? And look, for anybody second guess the inactives and whether or not Ayers would have made a difference in this game. Okay, maybe he catches one or two. I just don't see him being a big difference maker here for a guy.
No, I don't either. But I will ask you the question, and this goes back to something that obviously, you know, if there was news, and I'm going to come back to the coach thing. But while we're on this, so Fitz dresses and Marcus Harris doesn't. And I think that, you know, neither you nor I saw that, and I don't think most people did. And before the game, there were plenty of people who were a little surprised. And obviously, during the game, there were plenty of people who were pissed off about it. Let me ask you this, Dave. Now, do we go back and go, well, Le'Veon Bell didn't practice Wednesday or Thursday? You know, nobody really talked about this thing. There was the odd child story where I was told, you know, he did have a baby, but he didn't want it to be a distraction, so he didn't tell anybody. And so it's going to come out that he had a baby a couple of days ago. I mean, I heard all sorts of different stories, and I don't know exactly what the truth is. But there was also a story going around that Le'Veon Bell had a strained left groin. And, you know, I dismissed it. I hadn't heard anything about it. Figured the Steelers had to report that. So now, obviously, with the ability of hindsight, is there some possibility that's true? Is there some possibility the Steelers didn't report it, and that's part of the reason Le'Veon Bell didn't practice? And is that the reason they dressed Fitz Toussaint over DeMarcus Ayers? I mean, I'm not a big conspiracy theorist guy, but, you know, when some guy drops that kind of during the week that is kind of out of the blue and has no meaning to anybody, and then all of a sudden, second play of the game, Le'Veon Bell says, yeah, you know, injured my groin. I don't know. Just – Worth thinking about.
Well, you open that up by saying odd child story. I thought you talked to my old man or something. look, I mean, as soon as the game got over and then we started to hear Le'Veon Bell talk and I mean, did you really hear?
I did not hear him. So please fill me in because I was doing the
post game. Yeah, he just said that he had some groin problems prior to the game. Now, I certainly did not hear about him having groin problems ahead of the game. Did you? I mean, if I had heard of Le'Veon Bell having groin issues ahead of the game, I would have written about that. And we
I would have talked about it, and
you would have talked about it on the show. We would have talked about it on the podcast. I would have wrote three stories about it, driven it into the ground, beating it like a dead horse.
A huge deal.
I didn't have a clue.
So neither of us have a clue. Now you know where I'm going with this. Are the Steelers going to get a Richard Sherman deal on this?
I think they should. If this is something that prevented him from practicing. I mean, if Bell has come out now and said that he has been bothered by the groin, here's the thing. They tape all these practices, right? And they review all these practices. They'll know whether or not he was limited. You know, I guess the question is, can you take two snaps during a team session and it be considered a full practice?
He did not go to practice Wednesday and Thursday.
Okay, right. And he was listed on the injury report as not injury related.
Correct.
Okay. So did they plant their own story of odd child?
Yeah, go check in on somebody who might be thinking of having a child.
this is above my pay grade, talking about this stuff. In short, I mean, I guess he wasn't 100%. Now is this something that happened late in the Chiefs? I mean, let's face it, has Le'Veon Bell looked like he's had a groin problem?
No, I mean, we saw him slowed up a little bit in the fourth quarter of the Chiefs game, but you know, the Chiefs changed their defensive front and the Steelers had a big lead. Now, again, playing late in the game, well, they did take Le'Veon Bell out for that last series in the Miami game. In the Chiefs game, obviously not, and he gets the carry on first down in that last series of touches. So, I mean, he touched the ball as late in the game as he possibly could in that Chiefs game in a crucial situation. So you wouldn't think that it was something that was restricting him. But, you know, clearly – you know, maybe it happened on that play. Maybe who knows? But it's just odd that he said it was a previous condition. We heard about it during the week, and briefly and just completely dismissed it. And then, you know, two plays into the game, he's done, because I don't know that it was that play that necessarily injured him. It feels like maybe that just aggravated something that was a pre-existing condition. Odd situation.
Yes, it is. And losing Bell early in that game is not what lost it for the Steelers offensively, but it certainly didn't help. I mean, D'Angelo Williams still, I mean, in that first half, I mean, look, this is a one, this was for as bad as things went in the first half, it was a one possession game, right?
Yeah, it should have been 17-13 and the Patriots ball with a minute 40 left. I mean, you know, you figure you score there somehow.
17-14.
Or you think they go for two?
Yeah.
All right. So okay. Semantics. I mean, you know, if it's 17-14, you have the ball. I'm not going to tell you the game turns out differently because it doesn't. So let me ask you this. I got a million calls in the postgame about Ben Roethlisberger sneaking the football. And the answer that I give generally is, look, I was at the game in D.C. in 2008 when the Steelers played the Redskins, when Ben at the end of the half tried to sneak in. I can't remember if he made it or not. Finishes the half. It's very late in the half. He finishes the half, and then Byron Leftwich plays the second half. Ben hurts his neck on the play. And since that time, it's not Ben's never run a quarterback sneak, but he rarely runs quarterback sneaks. I mean, when we see it, we make a point of talking about it on the podcast that there's an unusual quarterback sneak by Ben. And at the same time, we know that Tom Brady is a quarterback sneak extraordinaire. And so you saw both guys, you saw the Steelers not do it. You saw Brady do it. We'll get to that play in a minute. But Dave, I was never really thinking at that situation that Ben was going to sneak it. Did it cross your mind? I mean, really, it didn't even cross my mind. Did it cross yours?
No, not really. I mean, look, D'Angelo Williams is one of the better goal-to-go running backs, right?
I mean, yeah, and it was third and a foot when he scored his 5-yard touchdown. So, you know, you'd seen it once already.
Right. Now, getting stuffed to play, we'll have to go back and look at the old, like I said, I think Grimble played a role in that. I don't think Pouncey did a great job. Who was it, Branch or whoever was over the top of him at one point there. Yeah, back-to-back thrown for losses, and then what was that next play? The Eli Rogers play. You got to be able to execute down there.
So,
and the red zone, the last two games, they haven't been able to
killer,
do that.
Killer, and that has been a big concern. I didn't get your answer on the Sammy Coates play call. Did you mind the throw to Sammy Coates? I didn't mind it.
No, if I'm an outsider and I know nothing about what about the background of the person, if I'm thumbing through Appalachian State versus whoever and I see the same situation, they go deep to a wide receiver outside there, I have no issue with that call.
Right. So I'm with you.
I think the only issue is why do you what most fans will be mad about is why do you do it with a guy like Sammy Coates, a guy that
right. And that's what they're, I think that is what a lot of people are mad about is who they went to. And look, I think they wanted that matchup. They wanted Sammy on it. So the Steelers were looking for that and they got it. And Ben checked into it. And I, it's a run pass option. So, I mean, he had two choices there, but you get that look and they're going to do it. And I realize philosophically that's a problem for some people. You got the best black back, blah, blah, blah. Okay. I get the other side of the argument that you want to, get yardage. And I'll make the same argument that later in the game, when they had second and two on like the they had the 39 of the Patriots, I think that's about what it was. They threw deep to DHB in the end zone, and then they threw incomplete on the next play, and then they ended up punting from the 39. And this is when the Patriots went on their 88-yard touchdown drive. You punt from the 39 when you have second, whatever it was second and seven, I think, and you go deep to DHB, but. That's a situation where your whole priority on that series of three downs should be to get in field goal range. And look, I loved when they throw deep. So this is going to sound a little bit hypocritical of me, but in that particular situation with the first down on the 42, you gain 3 yards on first down. If you get 5 more yards, you're now in Boswell's range. And that should be your first priority rather than taking a shot there. So if we're going to talk about one play call in the whole game that I didn't like, that might be the one.
You know what? We got a couple of emails, a couple, people. Look, we obviously have to talk about this game immediately after it happens.
Yeah, we'll get to emails on Wednesday. We're not going to get to them today.
And some people are wanting us to talk a little bit about draft or whatnot here, and maybe we'll do that here in these final 15 minutes or so.
No, we got too much to get. We'll get to draft and emails on Wednesday and Friday.
Okay. And maybe we should have Alex Kirby on, David, who's written a book about Bill Belichick and that offense. And and talk a little bit about, and you know, I talk to him all the time. He's very familiar with what the Steelers do defensively. Maybe we'll have Alex on, Alex Kirby on Friday or something, and talking about.
Yeah, and I had Michael Hawley, who wrote the books Brady and Belichick, and it just came out in October of this year. I had him on my show on Friday, and you know, I'm fascinated. As Dave and I love football, and we're fascinated by greatness. I don't walk around kind of. I don't have a lot of hate for. I get hate for bad guys. I don't have hate for Belichick or Brady or whatever. I've got a lot of admiration for what they've accomplished, and I love to read. I don't generally read sports books that are topical, as in I lived my way through it, so let me read about it again. That's not really my thing, but this book is excellent.
And Alex Kirby writes X's and O's and can tell you every formation,
yeah.
Everything that the awesome. Patriots – and that's why I think it would be good to have him on to talk about what the Steelers did wrong and what they need to do to start beating.
Yeah, it's a good idea. We'll lose half our listeners for a podcast, but that's fine. I'm all – I would like it.
Hey, I would learn something from it, and I think
– Yeah, that's half the reason we do it, right?
right. So the heck with the rest of you. But all right, the fumble.
Yeah, okay. So – So I'll give you my take. You give me yours. Dave and I haven't discussed this. Here was my view on this. It was when, you know, Brady's good at this. There's no. I said to myself, it's a silly challenge by Tomlin. The timeout's not likely to make a big difference, but it's a silly challenge because they're never going to be able to get an angle that shows anything that's going to be definitive. Okay, so that's my initial reaction. We go to commercial. We come back. I see this angle. And that's completely different that shows that Brady fumbled the football. And now I'm like, so what I tweeted was, if somebody in the press box saw that and got a message down to Mike Tomlin, that is a brilliant challenge. Now, if they didn't, then it was just a high risk challenge that I think still was silly. But it's such a, you know, if a turnover and if all your guys think they got the ball, even though, you know, don't trust players on the field, then it's not a ridiculous challenge like some people thought. I thought in my mind it was an unwinnable challenge, likely unwinnable. And then you see that other angle, and it looks like a fumble. And then here's where the mass confusion comes in, because Jim Nance, who did not have his best day announcing this game, says I can't tell whether the referee – I didn't know what, Dave, when the referee spoke, whether the referee said the Steelers clearly recovered the ball.
I have the quote.
Okay, give it. Go ahead.
Okay, because I wrote this up at 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning.
That's why we love you. That's why we love you.
I went – just to let you know, I went to bed at 4. And I thought, well, man, I'm going to be able to sleep maybe 3 hours. And I think I was sleeping good. Well, my wife's out of town. She calls me at 5:45 and wakes me up to say that the trash man's coming to get one of the recyclable cans that we don't use. Put it out there. And why does she call me at 5:45 in the morning on a Monday?
She thinks you're up.
Because she thinks I'm up. Well, guess who was up? I DM'd you a couple hours before I went to bed and said, "Dan, yeah. I'm not going to be able to do the podcast until 10 your time, which is 7 my time here in Vegas." All right, enough about me. I wrote this up in the post last night. Tomlin proceeded to throw the red challenge flag before the Patriots could snap the football again. And here's what Terry McCauley said. Pittsburgh has challenged that the runner fumbled and they clearly recovered the football. Timeout. I'm going to read that to you again. I want you to tell me how you interpret that. Pittsburgh has challenged that the runner fumbled and they clearly recovered the football. Timeout.
Yeah, so we don't know if there's if those are connected as a conjunction, or if there's a semicolon there, and then he says, and they clearly recovered the football. So that's why the confusion, because it's not clear whether he's saying they're challenging both of these things, or they're challenging this, and by the way, they did clearly recover the football.
Right, and I think that's where the confusion came in. Now,
I'm still confused. What's the answer?
I'm still confused too. But and you talking about conjunctions. I had conjunctivitis a couple years ago. And the only thing, other thing, I remember something conjunction junction. What's that function or something like that? I wonder how many heads.
So let me ask you this.
Here's what I think. I think the referee worded it wrong. In other words, he's saying he's challenging that the runner fumbled and that they clearly, and that they recovered the football, not that they challenged the runner fumbled. And, oh, hey, yeah, people, there was a clear fumble recovery at the end of that.
Twitter follower tweeted to me, and I can't remember the rule exactly. They said if it was clear the Patriots recovered the ball, they wouldn't have allowed the challenge.
Here's what Mike Pereira put on Twitter. He says, I watched the second game from afar. No penalties in the first half. Only controversy seemed to be the Brady fumble. It was ruled down, but ... What do they call those ... David?
I would have been able to tell you if you hadn't asked me, and I'll get it for you.
Golly, give you a chance to educate me with that Yale education of yours.
Yeah, damn it.
All right, let me continue while you Google the internet.
Yeah, I gotta Google it.
Pereira says it looked to be a fumble. However, in order to reverse the call, you have to see a clear recovery before the ball enters the scrum. Period. His next tweet: player coming out of the pile with the ball is not considered a clear recovery. That appeared to me the reason the call stood as being down. In other words, he thinks, and this was while it happened, obviously, that even though Javon Hargrave emerged from the pile, the scrum, with the football in his right hand, that the officials never saw a clear recovery, and that's why he feels the call on the – it would be nice if the referees told us that.
Yes.
As part of coming out of the review. I mean, they didn't even say Brady was ruled down, right? They just said
that. And that must be what it was. They ruled Brady, or they ruled that he fell on the fumble and then was ruled down.
Or that they had no clear recovery. I mean, at least tell us, just don't tell us where the call on the field stands. that's not good enough. I mean, because we're gonna look at that thing 20,000 times, and some of us bloggers in our basement are going to transcribe what the official says.
Right.
Okay.
It's an ellipsis. It's an ellipsis.
What the hell is that? Is that one of them things that you get on that?
That's an elliptical. That'll make you faint. Yeah. The ellipsis is the three dots. There we go. We got it.
Okay. Good.
All right. So there's your controversial play. We discussed the coach play. We discussed what they did at the goal line and the quarterback sneak stuff. I mean, I don't know. There's not a lot to discuss in the second half. Mike Mitchell bit in the flea flicker. The rest of the stuff. At that point, you're writing your end of the season review because they weren't coming back and doing anything. Kobe drops the touch. I guess that was a play. Kobe. How about they run a damn fade coming out of a timeout on fourth and goal? I mean, look, people are complaining it was to Kobe Hamilton. Well, if you're going to run it, who are you going to run it to? I mean, at least he's the tallest of the guys, and he does make some combat catches, although obviously he did not have his best game yesterday. So it's not necessarily the – I'm not necessarily upset about which receiver you threw it to. Just people, I think it's the dumbest call in football.
That stuff you run during the preseason to guys named Kobe Hamilton.
Exactly. And maybe that's why their next game will be in the preseason.
And didn't they run that during the preseason to guys named Kobe Hamilton? Wasn't that against the Saints or the Eagles?
I can pull plays out, man, but I can't put – the only preseason play I got is that pass over the middle against the Giants to Dree Archer where he went for four.
No. That was one of Landry Jones' 13 interceptions in the game against the Eagles, right?
Yeah, his four interceptions game, in the first half, yeah.
That he threw that jump ball a little bit underthrown, and we were talking about how Kobe could have. Boy, it seemed like yesterday. Where did the season go, David? But And that's the only other time that I think that they've run that during the game to Kobe Hamilton. But look, not a great. Once Eli Rogers fumbled, it was get the content rolling, boys.
Say goodnight, Gracie.
Get the content rolling. Chris Hogan, just goes to show you 20 yard per catch average, 9 catches for 180 yards, 2 touchdowns.
Ian Julio Jones both had 180 yesterday.
Julian Edelman, 118 yards. Can't wait to look at the Yak stats on this.
You saw that right on the fifth play of the game or the second play of the game. Edelman catches ball, goes over that right. So Artie misses a tackle. Bud doesn't have a good angle. Mike Mitchell doesn't have a good angle. He goes for 49 yards. I mean, there you go.
And to think we were worried about running backs, New England running backs catching the football out of the backfield in this game. James White had 3 for 8 yards. Deion Lewis had 2 for 8 yards. Devlin, the fullback, had 1 for 13 yards. LeGarrette Blount had 1 for 8 yards. Those Hogan, Edelman, I guess Amendola for that matter. I mean, it was Hogan and Edelman just carving them up. 17, catching 17 of 22 pass targets, those two players for 298 yards and 3 touchdowns. I mean, that's just brutal. And they probably Hogan have a drop or on that first drive?
Yeah, well, throw behind him in the third. Yeah, he had a drop on the first drive that finished that almost Mitchell interception that killed that drive. And then,
that was Mitchell. That's right. You're right. That's Mitchell.
And then the Hogan one was the ball actually Brady threw behind him. And the funny thing was, you know, they showed the angle of that where all the Patriots fans were behind. You could see Brady and then all the Patriots fans. And what's that thing that Deadspin, somebody coined the name when a fan base goes up and puts their hands on their foreheads? It's something Cobra. Everybody.
Cobra Kai.
Yeah, just like it's like spitting, it's, you know, sad Cobra or whatever. Everybody slapped their hands up on their forehead when Brady missed Hogan over the middle there. But, you know, those are about the only two plays that it feels like they didn't execute other than some running plays. But the passing game, they were brutally efficient. And by the way, you know, you'll keep seeing – if you turn on any of the ESPN channels, you're going to keep seeing this flea flicker. You want to watch a perfect throw or the touchdown to Edelman where he stops on a dime and goes the other direction right at the goal line. Watch those two throws. One is Brady leads Hogan into the open side of the field and lays it on him. And it's just it seems so simple, and I think that's why it's frustrating that we don't see it executed better all the time. But he leads him into the open side of the field. It's just an easy, easy catch for a touchdown. And then the one to Amendola is just a dart that the DB keeps running, and he stops and goes one step the other way, and it's about as easy. Pitch and catch, man. I mean, I if you draw a 2-yard circle around receivers in this game, New England receivers on balls they caught, I'll bet half of them there's nobody in it. Oh, I got a stat for you. Did you hear this one? Yesterday, in the first half, Tom Brady threw 5.4%. You know, these people get technical on the percentage points, which is, you know, what he threw in the first half, 18 passes. So when you're talking about point something, it's meaningless. He threw 5% of his passes into contested windows. On the game, he ended up throwing about 2.5% of his passes into contested windows, which means he probably threw none in the second half into contested windows. That was by far the lowest number in the NFL this season. The average was 19%. He threw 2.5% of it, which means what? Did he throw 40 passes?
Total attempts, wasn't it 38 or something? What was it?
Yeah, I mean, it's basically he threw.
He threw 42. That's right, 42. And he completed 32.
Basically, he threw one pass into a contested window is what that means. To get to 2.5%, you double it. If you throw one, you get to, you know, get to 85, you got 2, and you get another 0.5%. So he threw about one pass in the whole game into a contested window. I don't know if that's exactly right or how it's defined, but you get the idea. He wasn't jamming it in there. Guys were wide open.
So you're saying they were college open?
College open. And he didn't have to throw them open or wait for, you know, they were just open.
And the thing is we, you know, generally don't view Tom Brady as a guy that takes a lot of deep ball shots, right? I mean, he normally.
No, but he's done a little bit more lately.
He normally paper cuts you to death underneath. And what was he, something like 5 of 6 on deep passes against the Steelers in this game? And the Steelers have really done a great job for most of the season and not get beaten deep with deep passes. But so much for that point. Just looking at these highlights and that first touchdown to Hogan. And what the hell is Robert Golden even doing on the field at that point? All right, let's recap things, David. Who are you firing?
Me and you? I mean, Danny Smith's probably up for a conversation. I know Richard Mann may retire. John Mitchell is an older guy. You know, I don't know what his status is. Danny Smith is the only guy whose job I think is in jeopardy.
I would agree. I think Keith Butler, though, I think you need to start getting a little bit more complex with this young defense, and that's probably – being a young defense is probably what we saw, why we saw what we saw scheme-wise predominantly maybe in this game. I don't know why they didn't play more cover one with kind of bracketing that number three underneath a little bit more. I don't know. But let's talk about, the base, you know, the youth of the defense and what they got to have going on offense. Do you like the core of what they have on both sides of the football? What do they need more of?
I really like where they are. I think they and the Patriots will be the Super Bowl favorites for next season. The Steelers are going to need another running back. Well, we can talk about, you know, we can talk about who on Wednesday. We can talk about who played their last game in a Steelers uniform. But they're going to draft a running back. We'll see what happens with Landry Jones. We've had that discussion. Primary need is an edge rusher, no doubt. And I think you would like another defensive lineman, A, for depth, and B, in that rotation. So I would not be surprised if their first three picks in the draft are edge rusher, defensive lineman, and running back in some order. I know defensive line probably isn't as high on some people's radars, but you have a guy like Cam get hurt, and his, you know, LT Walton came along okay, and you've got Hargrave. But you look at the really good teams, and they've got depth on that D-line. Steelers need more depth on that D-line.
I'm going to disagree with you on a defensive line because I think LT Walton came on, and he's a true, you know, defensive end and can probably – and your Hargrave can also give you snaps in a nickel situation, which, let's face it, what's, you know, 80% of what they run is sub-package football. So I think they have four bodies already, and maybe a fifth if you consider Johnny Maxey, that can give you snaps on a defensive line. And we'll see what happens with a guy like Ricardo Matthews. So I'm going to disagree with you on the defensive line. You know where I stand on edge rushers. give me about three or four of those in this draft, and maybe one in the first round if you can get one at 30th overall. What about tight end, David? What about, regardless of what we think about Ladarius Green at this point, we have to be concerned that Ladarius Green's concussion problems might prevent him from playing snaps in the future. So Jesse James is not a guy. Jesse James is not Rob Gronkowski or one of those kind of tight ends. So do you consider a tight end in the first couple of rounds if you can get a Jake Butts or
O.J. Howard?
O.J. Howard out of Alabama or one of those, you know, the kid out of Miami. You know,
Inuku or Najuku.
Yeah. Do you consider that over a running back and over a defensive lineman? I mean,
let me put it this way: I wouldn't take tight end in the first round, but if they took a tight end high, I got no problem with it. I really would like to look. I'm still buying into Ladarius Green and his story. He's not a lot of dead money if they cut him.
But the risk is there.
Right, but I guess what I'd want a doctor to tell me is if he's healthy here over these next 3 months, is the risk any greater for Ladarius Green than it is for, you know, Antonio Brown? is the fact that he has had concussions. Is he, I mean, are we talking about he's at 5% greater risk than Antonio Brown or 50% greater risk than Antonio Brown? If he tells me 5%, then I don't care. If he tells me 50%, maybe I look at it differently.
Once again, that's over my pay grade as far as a concussion. And I think several people need to be careful what they tweet out as well, too. So I call him soft, and he's got to get himself back on the field. And look, a lot of this is out of his hands. And well, now you know, now we'll have all off season to see what happens with him. And as we talk about some of these other tight ends that have, you know, or other players that have retired because of concussions in the past, who knows what's going to happen with him? I just think that you have to accept the point that he might have an issue. And
sure.
And if that is indeed the case, and you're not 100% comfortable with him playing all 16 games for you next season, you might want to consider a move tight end in his mold. And I think, once again, we live in today's NFL where I think your top three picks are players that you have to do your best to get on the field right away. Am I right or am I wrong?
Absolutely right. I mean, you they're at a point where they now are – they're a good enough team that I don't necessarily expect – all top three guys to be on the field necessarily in year one, but you have to see that there is a path for them in the first 2 years.
Well, I think nowadays in today's option years and 4 year contracts, I think we saw the Steelers this year with, you know, made it a point to get these guys on the field early. We started to see them start to do it with guys like Jarvis, and unfortunately that didn't work out, but in other words, I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm not so sure I take a running back, David, in the first three picks either. I think I focus on outside linebacker, tight end, maybe an inside linebacker.
Who's your backup running back?
We'll see what happens with D'Angelo. He might not want to play. If he wants to come back and play it cheap, I let him come back and play for cheap, and then – you know, maybe Fitzgerald, Toussaint's your number three guy for another year. If you franchise tag, you could.
Because if you, well, Bell's, you know, he got hurt in this game. This is three straight years where he's ending the season with an injury.
I think you might give him the tag and might just not sign. You could string him along for a couple of years on a franchise.
Well, I'm just worried about having a legit insurance policy, and maybe Toussaint's that guy, but I got to think they're taking a running back. I wouldn't take one in the first round. Probably wouldn't, second through fourth, put me down for a running back.
I wouldn't take him in the first two, but I would consider it at the third. What's going to happen at inside linebacker? Don't tell me that you're going to upgrade from Lawrence Timmons by putting Tyler Matakavage or Vince Williams in that spot alongside Ryan Shazier. Don't tell me that you think that's an upgrade.
I wouldn't say that it's an upgrade, but, Timmons is going to be a negotiation now. Look, I've said all along I didn't think he'd be back, and I also said I didn't expect him to play like he did in the last eight games. I think they're going to reevaluate
even he's not enough, though. So
the point is, you know, all these older guys, even the ones under contract, you got Harrison, you got Timmons, you got D'Angelo Williams, not under contract. Certainly, there is no guaranteed roster spot for DHB and William Gay. There are a lot of young receivers on the team. They're going to be defensive backs. Whatever they think of Golson, who knows? He's a huge wild card. Gilbert and Shabazz are bigger, lankier guys who might be able to play the slot in the future. So William Gay, you know, he's a big locker room guy. He's been an important guy, but there are no guarantees as much as those two guys are loved and beloved in the locker room. And guys like Dave and I love having around, and obviously Mike does too. No guarantees they're back.
I think Gay's back. I think Timmons ends up maybe being back. The thing is you have to – I guess what I'm getting at is you probably have to address that inside linebacker position with a more athletic kind of Shazier type player.
Let's get to all this Wednesday as we're rolling along here.
Offense. So the young receivers ended up, even though they contributed during the season at points, the young receivers weren't there for this offense on Sunday when Belichick took away Antonio Brown and Bell was taken away due to injury. You know, I think Jesse James, bless his heart, he's not a guy that you can count on to put up a 60-catch season in there.
Hey, Steelers fans, the mortgage process can sometimes be more challenging than spelling Roethlisberger or scoring more than 20 points against the Patriots or just beating the Patriots for. Let our buddy Craig Auction guide you through the sometimes daunting mortgage process to help you score the home of your dreams, even in New England. If you're considering buying or refinancing a home now or in the future, please give Craig Auction a call. He's an experienced, nationally recognized lender that can help you achieve the dream of home ownership. Call Craig Auction today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Email Craig at blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. First Advantage Mortgage Company, NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399. Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. Sorry, Dave, didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you needed to. I forgot we had to get to that. Sometimes I need to be cut off like that. But all right, we could turn this into a two-hour show. I certainly am trying to do so, but we can't. And we'll be back on Wednesday and Thursday. We'll look ahead. We'll talk about free agents, and we'll talk more about draft. And like I said, maybe we'll have Alex Kirby on Friday. Our Alex Cazora is at the Senior Bowl this week, so you'll look for updates on the site for him. We'll be talking salary cap.
And it's unclear whether Tomlin's having a presser tomorrow. The schedule has not been sent out, so the team is meeting this afternoon. There is some open locker room, so there'll probably be some sound coming out of there. But, we'll obviously update you as we know.
Successful season, David. I know that you don't win the Super Bowl. The obvious answer is no. But
yeah, I mean, look, in any sport, in my view, if you get to the conference championship in any sport, regardless of what the expectations were, I think you had a successful season. If the Patriots had lost that game, I'd say they had a successful season. Not what they want, not what the Steelers want. They took a step forward from last year. It's a bitter taste to lose as badly as they did, but yes, a successful season.
And I would have never thought after, say, around week 7 or week 8 that this team would be playing for the AFC Championship. So I think there's something to be said there, them being able to get that far. Sure, it's not the ultimate goal, but I'm with you. I'm surprised they got as far as they got. Boy, what a great season, David. I appreciate all the work that you put in. Alex Cazora, all of our guest beat writers that we had on the show throughout the season, we want to thank them as well, too. Our sponsor, Craig, absolutely fantastic. Welcome aboard, and we hope to re-up him again as well, too. And you can follow me on Twitter at Cedars Depot. Follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate, go to cedarsdepot.com. Find that donate button there. Without listeners, this show would be nothing. David, I think we had record numbers as far as listenership the last 2 weeks combined of the three episodes. So that says something as well, too. Thank you for listening, and we hope you kind of stay with us moving on forward into the offseason.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.